Hong Kong Philharmonic Orchestra, Wagner's Ring Cycle, Part 4, Götterdämmerung. So, after more than 2 hours of music, longer than a normal orchestral concert, in fact, it's actually longer than the whole of Puccini's La Bohème, we've got to the end of just the first act. Act two is next. It's only 70 minutes. And tell us, Sue, what's in store for us, please.
Sure, Michael. The first scene of Act two has a bit of an unearthly quality to it. I think in some ways similar to the Norns that we heard at the very beginning of the prologue, but without the mythic dimensions of those characters. When the curtain rises on Act two, we see Hagen, who is half asleep. His father, Alberich, is with him. And Alberich takes this opportunity to relate aspects of the ring story that involve him, but from his perspective. You know, I've talked about that already. We have a lot of retelling of the story throughout the ring cycle. It's one of the devices that Wagner uses to bring the audience closer. It's one of the techniques that Wagner uses to illustrate the same story from different perspectives. And in this case, Alberich encourages Hagen to take possession of the golden ring. In his sleepy state, Hagen agrees, but swears to be true only to himself. Alberich fades from view, and Siegfried arrives on stage to begin Act Two. In the second scene of Act Two, Siegfried updates Hagen and Gutruna on the story of Gunther and Brunhilde that we saw play out earlier in Act One. So, Michael, as we're getting ready then to move from scene two to scene three, this would be a great opportunity for you to talk a little bit about one of the special elements of Götterdämmerung, and that is the appearance of an opera chorus.
Right, because I find it interesting that in all of Wagner's operas, there are choruses except for the first three in the Ring Cycle. No chorus at all. Mm-hmm. And in Götterdämmerung, there are three scenes with chorus, two of which are only tenors and basses. So there's only one scene, which is SATB. But nevertheless, it's all extremely important to the drama and, in fact, to the variety in this opera as compared to the other three. And we've managed to get an amazing chorus together, which is made up of members from the Hong Kong Philharmonic Chorus here. And we've also got the Latvian State Choir and the Bamberg Symphony Chorus, who are bringing the sort of the expert German pronunciation with them. And as you know, Sue, diction is critical in any Wagner opera, particularly
Absolutely.
The Ring Cycle.
Yep.
But maybe the cherry on the cake is the fact that we happen to have the chorus master from Bayreuth, home of Richard Wagner's Ring Cycle, who is here to make sure that the chorus we have, this combined choruses from three different countries, has the sort of the Bayreuth Wagner sound. And I think they've captured it beautifully. So this is really exciting for the audience.
Absolutely, what a treasure. Congratulations.
And we've got 60 men and 20 women, so it's going to be a big sound.
Oh yeah, and in my recollection, that's a bigger size chorus than you would find in a staged production.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think that's really great. What a wonderful sound that's going to be on stage at the Cultural Center.
Sensational.
Fantastic. Okay, well, Act 2, Scene 3 begins with Hagen summoning his vassals, the chorus men, bidding them come gather with their weapons to welcome back Gunther and his fiancée Brunhilde. He asks his men to slaughter a boar, a goat, and a sheep as an appeasement to the gods Fro, Donner, and Fricka, respectively. And this scene concludes with Hagen's request that the vassals keep Brunhilde safe at all costs. Now, it's a special moment in Götterdämmerung when Hagen summons his vassals, because we get to hear an instrument that we've only heard once before in the Ring Cycle, and we know that Wagner added a bunch of instruments in the Ring that you don't hear in many other operas, and especially in operas composed by other composers. But here, he calls on the orchestra, brass players usually, to play something called a Stierhorn. And I'm wondering, Michael, if you can share with us some information about the instruments and how that's all working here.
Well, sure. First of all, a Stierhorn, just to give you an idea of what it might look like. Imagine a bugle horn, which might be 6 to 9 inches long, a very short trumpety type instrument. And then the other extreme is the Swiss Alp horn, which might be 15 to 20 feet long, stretching out and actually the bottom of it actually being on the ground while you're playing it. Well, a Stierhorn is about 3 to 4 feet long. And we happen to have three of them. There are three required in Götterdämmerung, only one in Die Walküre. And we got them from Germany, and we have some local trombone players from Hong Kong who are playing them. And the sound is very unique. And so we have this unique sound, as well as, of course, the Wagner tubas, which are played by horn players. So although it's called a tuba, it's actually closer to a French horn. So French horn players play Wagner tubas, and trombone players play Stierhorns.
Okay. I think just as we're sitting here chatting, the closest, maybe popular equivalent to Stierhorns that I can think of, appear in soccer stadiums around the world. What do they call them? A vuvuzela? Something like that.
Right,
You
yeah.
know, they're.
And they make I wouldn't call it a noise that you would want in a Wagner opera, but I know what you're talking about.
Thank you. And I think the Stierhorns, though, they don't necessarily have the most beautiful round sound that we would hear from the Wagner tubas or even the trombones. They're meant to be to play a sound that carries for miles, right?
Yeah,
Because he's
yeah.
summoning these rough
Yeah.
group of
Yeah.
hunters.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great sound that we make with these instruments.
Sure, and of course Wagner helps us not just with the sound of those instruments, but the pitches he chooses are right next to one another on the piano.
Right.
And that means that there's this wonderful sense of tension because we want those notes to be actually farther apart to sound more beautiful.
No, good point.
Well, so lots to look forward to in the middle of Act Two here with the whole scene of the chorus and the Stierhorns. Moving on from that, the fourth scene in Act Two continues the story directly from the previous. Gunther arrives with Brünnhilde, and almost immediately she sees Siegfried and is confused about why he is there at the Gibich Palace. He still doesn't really remember their relationship, so when he tells Brünnhilde that he's married to Gutruna, like she will be to Gunther, Brünnhilde's confusion is very evident to everyone. It's quite the scene once the conspirators and the victims are all on stage together, and it's one that I know you'll really enjoy. This is opera at its absolute finest. The fifth and final scene with Brünnhilde, Gunther, and Hagen lays out the consequences for Siegfried of his naive arrogance and his trust in the wrong people. There are so many twists and turns in this act, it's astonishing in its complexity and in its power. So Act Two of Götterdämmerung is just about to begin. It runs just over an hour, approximately 70 minutes. If you had seat belts in your seats at the Cultural Center, I'd suggest you buckle them up because it's quite a roller coaster for our hearts and minds. Maestro?